fine.
Okay.
Yeah. My grandfather, my mom. So yeah, she used to live in this one.
David Benoit.
My
okay.
Grandfather here. That's my
father.
My mother's father. Let's get started. We're holding two lines from the bottom of the telephone page. Okay. We discussed like this. We were discussing the question, if a person is menager wine to be brought to the carbon, what do you do with it? So first we were discussing, Shmuel says what you do is you pour it on the fire of the mezeach. So that led to the question, what about you putting out some of the fire? So we discussed the pros and cons of that, and we said that it's being done for a mitzvah, so there's it's only part of the fire, so it's not so bad. Then we brought a couple of other brises that said that no, if you're menadic wine, you pour it into the kolin, you pour it into the basin on top of the mezeach. So the last thing he said was that there's a machloikas tanurim, there's a machloikas Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon in a few places in Shas, most notably in Shabbos, about the question of Dover Shein Miskavin, if you do something which you're not intending to accomplish a malacha, Rabbi Shimon holds it's okay, Rabbi Yehuda holds it's not. Therefore, Shmuel would hold like Rabbi Shimon. You're not intending to put out the fire, and it's not inevitable that you will, because as Rashi says, you can do it in little droplets, and that way it won't put out. Well, the halacha in that regard is actually like Rabbi Shimon, that Dover Shein Miskavin is mutter. But based on different things, I think more discussed in different places in chapter. So anyway, the point is, Shmuel would be going according to that. Okay, so the question. No, but it will weaken the fire in some parts. I don't know. No, it's just that's what the according to Shmuel. That's right. You either have to pour it on the fire or you have to pour it in the spalim. So Shmuel was saying you pour it on the fire. Okay, so the question is, the two lines from the bottom, remember that the Shmuel could have Shimon's spirit away. So you're telling me that Shmuel holds in this regard like Rabbi Shimon. Well, I'm a Shmuel, but we find a different din that Shmuel says. Now, this is as far as a different malacha of habits. This is as far as the malacha of kibui, which is putting out a fire. Well, it's also actually the same malacha, putting out a fire on Shabbos. Now, okay, so Shmuel says like this. If you have a glowing piece of metal sitting in your shosharabim. Nowadays, I guess the equivalent would be like a downed electric wire or something. Yeah. So it's in your shosharabim, and people are going to get injured by it. Therefore, you're allowed to put it out on Shabbos. The shul shall use both of rabim in order that the rabim don't get injured by it. The point being, because the whole concept of kibbutz, you're putting out, does not apply to metal midaraisa. Metal doesn't burn, really. It heats up. And you have a glowing piece of metal, but putting it out on Shabbos would not be an issur daraisa. The malacha of kibbutz, you're putting out a fire on Shabbos, would refer to something that actually burns. Metal doesn't burn, so say. So therefore, it's only us in the job. And I'm here because the rabbim are going to be injured by it, then Shmuel says you're allowed to put it out.
Wait.
The point is, avaloy gechelos shalei. But Shmuel says you would not be allowed to do that if it was a coal of wood, because there the issur daraisa still exists. Now, there's another concept in Malachas of Shabbos, besides for Dover Shein Miskavin that we were talking about, there's another concept called Malacha Shein Tzricha Legufa. You actually have a quote that's Rashi and Tosfos, what the definition of Malacha Shein Tzricha Legufa is. Rashi learns in Shabbos and in other places that what it means is that basically you're doing something you would rather not have been in a situation where you have to do it. What was in the Mishkan, what did they put out fires for? They needed to make charcoal in order to be able to melt metal, because you can't melt metal over an ordinary fire of wood. It's not hot enough. You need to make charcoal, and then you use charcoal to melt metal. So therefore, they had to put out fires on Shabbos for that purpose. Also, actually, it was also when they were, actually, I think it's more of the Bible said something different, that when they were heating up the ingredients for the dye, they'd have to put out the fire to make sure that they don't burn. Whatever it is, that's the malacha, the purpose of the malacha of putting out a fire in the Mishkan was in order to produce charcoal. So if you're doing the malacha for...
Then they burn the charcoal.
Right.
Because
charcoal burns hotter than wood, yeah. So therefore, the malacha of kibui on Shabbos, the malacha of machabe, is where you're doing it in order to produce charcoal. Now, here you're not. Where do they find wood, you might as well ask. But obviously, I mean, they have to outfish it, but they had other wood also. I mean, so they also have... They burn wood. So first of all, there are... Okay, stop. Okay, hold on. in the desert, first of all, a desert is not all sand and rocks. You have sometimes little trees and things that grow there. They could use those to make charcoal. They could have also bought wood from the surrounding nations, the same way as they bought other things as they were going along, whatever. The point is they managed to get wood for charcoal. The point is, the malacha of kidri is only in order to produce charcoal. If you're doing it for some other purpose, like in this case, you're doing it in order that the rabbi shouldn't get injured by it, that's a malacha shein tzricha legufa. And Shmuel is saying that a malacha shein tzricha legufa is osur, because otherwise he would say the same rule would apply if it was a burning wood coal. And yet he doesn't.
You don't need directly, no.
If you don't need it for that purpose. Now that's how Rashi is. Tosfos and Shabbos and other places argues with that and says a different definition of it is not if you would have rather not do it, but if you're doing it not for the purpose that it was done in the Mishkan. Whatever. The point is that over here, you're not doing, over here, according to either definition, it's a malacha shein tzricha legufa. Rav Shimon holds such a thing as mutter, or at least it's not also d'oraisa, it's only also d'rabban. Rav Yehuda would disagree. We see that Shmuel is disagreeing with Rav Shimon on that. So we Tosfos says the Gemara is assuming for this purpose that if Shmuel holds like Rav Shimon as far as Dover Shein Meskaven, then he would also hold like him as far as Malacha Shein Tzricha Legufa. Now, Tosfos doesn't spell out over here why Tosfos says that the Gemara assumes because they go together. Different Mephoshim talk about, I think the Ritva, for example, and Shabbos talks about, because since by Shabbos we have the whole concept, Malachas Machshavas, after the Torah is only asking where you intended to do a certain Malacha, and you did it the way it's normally done, therefore the Gemara assumes that these two are part of the self, part and parcel of that. If you don't have one, if it's not Dover Shein Meskaven, or if you're doing a Shein Tzricha Legufa, then either way, one or the other, it can't be considered Malachas Machshavas. Therefore, whatever it is, the Gemara is assuming, therefore, that Shmuel, if he agrees with Shimon on one, would have to agree with him on the other. And if he disagrees on one, would have to disagree on the other. So if we see he disagrees with him as far as putting out the coal in the Shoshan Abim, even though that's Malacha Shein Tzricha Legufa, then we would assume he also disagrees with him as far as Dover Shein Meskaven. Therefore, he would have to say that when it comes, for example, to, let's say, dragging a bench on Shabbos, you would not be allowed to do it, where there's a possibility that it'll dig up the dirt. And in our case over here, you would not be allowed to pour the wine on the fire, where there's any possibility that it might put some of it out. And yet we see that Shmuel is saying you can. So that's the question. If you're going to tell me that Shmuel holds like Rav Shimon, then he should say by a wood coal also, because the issue of putting it out according to Rav Shimon would only be Dirabbanan. Would only be Dirabbanan because Daraita would only be if you're doing it in order to produce charcoal, and here you're not.
Okay.
The answer is that no. The Dava Shein Meskaven Savalak Rav Shimon, the Malacha Shein Tzricha Legufa Savalak Rav Yehuda. No, actually, Shmuel does not have to agree with Rav Shimon on both of those points. He can say that he can hold like Rav Shimon as far as Malacha Shein Tzricha Legufa, that you're not Chayev, he holds like Rav Shimon as far as Malacha Shein Tzricha Legufa, therefore you would, the Dava Shein Meskaven Savalak Rav Shimon. So when it comes to Dava Shein Meskaven, for example, dragging a bench, or for example, pouring wine on the fire of a Mizeach, he holds like Rav Shimon, therefore he's Mesel. But Malacha Shein Tzricha Legufa, Savalak Rav Yehuda. But as far as Malacha Shein Tzricha Legufa, he's Machmer like Rav Yehuda, right? So putting out the Gachelos in the Shosanam. So if the word Gachelos, it would be Osir, because that would be an Issa Jaraisa. Because whether you're doing it with this charcoal or not, Rav Yehuda, and therefore Shmuel would hold this Osir Jaraisa. But that's the thing. Even if it's a Gachelos Shal Eitz, then you're doing a Malacha Daraisa, and you don't have a Heter to do a Malacha Daraisa for the Heter for the Rabbanan. It's only a Malacha Darabbanan. So Rav Shimon would hold either way it's Malacha Darabbanan because you're not doing it to produce charcoal. Rav Yehuda would hold only if it's a metal. Only if it's a piece of hot metal would it be only Darabbanan, because then the whole concept of kibbutz doesn't apply to it, Daraisa. Because then it's not really on fire, it's just hot. So Shmuel holds like Rav Shimon in one regard, and like Rav Yehuda in the other regard. Okay.
So they
don't necessarily have to go together. Okay. Well, so you have a Tosfos over here, yes, that mentions over here about that Shmuel himself says that there are certain cases where you're allowed to do a certain malacha, and it seems that would only be according to Rav Shimon. So the Tosfos mentions that the Tosfos brings that the halachos gedolos has a paradox on it that is different when it's the tzar, but the Tosfos doesn't like that explanation. Tosfos answers that maybe Shmuel is only explaining what the Mishnah is saying, not that he agrees with it. Okay, anyway. The whole question of what things are also and not also on Shabbos is, of course, a very complicated topic, and here we're in Zvach, and we're not going to get in detail into it. That's from a Sefer Shabbos. So let's go on with it. Omer Rav Huna, Nesachim Shenitmu. Now let's say you have a case. So till now, there's always mentioning this din just because we've been talking about Nesachim, so we'll mention another din in connection with Nesachim, because otherwise we're not really going to have a place to discuss it. If you have Nesachim, so you have the flour or wine or oil that are supposed to go with a korban, or maybe in this case, we said wine is being brought by itself or whatever, and they became Shenitmu, and they became Tumim. What do you do with them? You make a separate pile of wood for them, Rashi learns that separate pile of wood is on the floor in the Azara. And Rashi mentions, because the idea is, since it's Sulei Kodshim, it has to be burnt in the Azara. You don't take it outside the Azara and burn it, but he learns that you just put it in that you just put it on the floor and burn it over there. Even though, because it's Tomei, therefore, instead of... So Rashi asked the question, why shouldn't you take it out? You should take it out to the base of Hashem like you would with any other things that are Tomei. Rashi says, because since it's something moist, because it's like if it's wine or whatever, and if you burn it together with other things, you're not really going to really notice it. So therefore, you burn them separately, and that way it's noticeable that you're burning them. The Rambam has a different understanding of it. The Rambam learns that this ma'arocha that you make for them is on top of the mezbeach. So you make a separate pile of wood on top of the mezbeach, and you burn these mesachim over there. Because the pasuk says that the context, the word bakodesh is referring to earlier in the pasuk, but because the pasuk is phrased this way, where it puts the word bakodesh next to ba'esh tisaris, so we can understand, we can darshan from it, that's something that became possible in the kodesh, hello? Something that became possible, bakodesh, ba'esh tisaris, has to be burnt in fire in the kodesh, so not outside the azara. I'm in the zeh, according to the Rambam, on the floor of the azara, according to that. Tanya Nami Hochi, indeed, we learn like that in the Braisa, Hadam v'Hashemen v'Menachos v'Nesachim Shenitmu, if blood of Kavonis, or oil, or Menachos, or wine of Nesachim became Tomei, Oysalahem Ma'arach v'Tnei Asman, you make a separate pile of wood for them, on the floor according to Rashi, on the Mizeach according to the Rambam, the third one in the book. Only Shmuel Rav Chana Bagata, so Shmuel tells Rav Chana Bagata, in different places, Rashi and Rashbam talk about in various places, Bagata could mean he's from Baghdad, it could be that it's short of Baal Agadta, that he was an expert in Agadta, whatever. He tells him, I see the Be'ach Sarah, I want you to gather for me 10 Tamar Chachamim, or 10 people, the Emelach Kamayu, and I'm going to tell you in front of them, because I want to be Mephiles in this din. Nesachim Shenitmu, Oysalahem Ma'arocha, but Sne Asman, the third one, if Nesachim becomes Tamar, you make a separate time for them, and you burn them. Now, why is Shmuel, now usually when you have, there's a couple of other, there's at least one other place in Shas where Shmuel does this, where he wants to make a public announcement of a din so that everybody should know this is halacha. Usually that's when there's a machlokas on the subject or whatever. Why is he dafka doing it over here? So the Achronim talk about, because just now we had a braita that said that this is true not only in the Sochim, but also blood and whatever. So Shmuel wants to stress that no, like Rav Huna said originally, it applies only to the Sochim. It does not apply to any other things that become Tomei. Okay. Hadron Allah Kol HaTotim. Yes, so now just in time for a new parak. Okay. This next parak is going to take up a topic like this. In Parshat Tzav, the Torah tells us about a chatas as follows. The pasuk says, "Kol asher yigabrav sora yisush." Okay, that's not really going to move. We're not really going to be discussing in our parak. Anything that touches a chatas and absorbs from it becomes holy, and it has to be eaten according to the rule of chatas. Fine, we're not really going to focus on that. But then the pasuk continues, "Va'asher yizem midama ala beged." If blood of a chatas splashes or squirts or whatever on a piece of clothing, "Asher yizela," whatever it's squirted on, to chabes from makom kadosh, has to be washed in a holy place, meaning inside the azar. And then the next part continues, Uchlicheres asher tibusha boi yishover, asher tibusha boi yishover, a chlicheres that a chatas is cooked in has to be broken, because eventually the paste that was absorbed into it becomes moister, and you can't kasher chlicheres. The chlin of chlicheres bushola, if it was in the paste, yeah, because of the particles of the chatas. That's why that becomes moister when they're on the chatas. Time keep, yeah. So, in the chlin nechoshes bushala, if it was cooked in a metal keli, nechoshes copper or whatever, or murdach the shukach b'mayim, then it has to be cleansed and washed with water. And we're going to learn in our parak that also has to be done in the azara. So that's going to be the subject of our parak. It's going to be these dinim that if blood, first we're going to deal with the case, the blood that splashes on a piece of clothing, it has to be washed in the azara. And then we're going to deal with later on this business of merito shtipa of breaking klei cheres and washing and cleansing klei nechoshes that a chatas is cooked in. And we're going to see also does this apply only to a chatos or to other carbonates. We'll discuss that also. As far as the dam chatos, actually, we're going to start dam chatos from Yitzhak al-Beged, but actually it does, we're going to end up saying that it does apply only to a chatos, and actually only certain kinds of chatos, as we'll see. But why should that be? There's a couple of different explanations. The Rashbam says because it's a chatos, because you don't want it to become noiser. They ask on that blood doesn't become noiser anyway. They give the answer because I think that I'm banned. Because we learned earlier in the Masechta that blood is not subject to the rules of noiser. If it's left overnight, it becomes possible to sprinkle on the Mizbeach. But if you eat it later on, of course, it's not high for noiser for it. But it's high for dam, yeah. But okay. Another idea is that it's supposed to be sprinkled on the Mizbeach. So therefore, like, you want to make sure it's not taken out of the Azara. Therefore, it has to be washed inside the Azara. And then the Rikanti gives a reason, I'll be Kabbalah, which is that since a chatas is meant to clean up the after effects of an Avera, like you have, like if something therefore touches the blood of a chatas, like sort of it gets a little bit of that tumor, and therefore you have to wash it and cleanse it thoroughly. No. Actually, no. If their clothes became dirty, we learned earlier they can't even do the avodah. And then, so no, they'd have to be careful. Actually, when they're doing the avodah, they'd have to be careful that blood does not get on their clothing. Yeah. If it did, then yeah. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. Come on. All right, let's get started. They carry them away from their body. They went till their wrist. Yeah. Okay. Mishnah says, Dam chatas shenita, besides which there are rules, actually, we're going to see. It's not so simple. It's not. It has to be blood that is usable for zrita, is one of the main things we're going to see. So actually, then come to think of it, as far as the pieces they're carrying up to the mizbeach, it's not even an issue. That's dam evorim anyway. You anyway can't sprinkle it on the mizbeach. So if that blood gets on their clothing, it would matter as far as that their clothing can't be dirty, but it wouldn't matter as far as the skin of kid with chatas. Anyway, so let's discuss it. They still can't work in dirty clothing. That's true. Yeah. Okay. Mishnah says, Dam chatas shenitas al beged. If blood of a chatas gets sprinkled on clothing, how is the term kibbutz? Then it has to be washed. And as we'll see later in the Azara. Now, afal pi she'ein hakosav medaber ela b'nei acholos. Now, even though the context for the pasuk, because it's only talking about chatos that are eaten, so therefore on the face of it should not apply to chatos hapnimiyus, which are not eaten, where the blood is taken into the heichol, chenema b'mokam kodesh te'ochol, because the previous pasuk says that they should be eaten in a holy place. Nevertheless, echad ha'nei acholos v'echad hapnimiyus tunis kibbutz. Nevertheless, whether the korban chatos is eaten or whether it's a type that's not meant to be eaten, chatos chesono or chatos pnimiyus, either way, tunis kibbutz, the blood has to be washed off the clothing in the Azara, Chenema, because the pasuk says Torah Achatos, because the pasuk starts saying Zois Torah Achatos, meaning Torah Achatos for all Achatos, meaning there's one rule for all Achatos. But that's it. So therefore, it applies to both kinds of Achatos. We'll see in the Gemara, that it does not apply to Achatos to Oys, and we're going to have a long discussion why not. So that's what we'll see. Continues the Mishnah. Chatos what if the chatos became fossil? Then the blood does not have to be washed off the clothing in the Azara. Then you can wash it. You can wash it wherever you want, or you don't have to wash it. Whether the chatos had at any point of time when it was kosher and later on it became fossil, or whether it never had a time of kashrus in the first place. Either way, once it became fossil, then if the blood of it gets on clothing, you don't have to do this kibbutz in the Azara. What are examples of cases where it had a shata kosher? Shalona, if it was left overnight, if there was blood that is was left overnight, then it's possible to sprinkling. Vishnisma, or if it became tummy. Some of the approaches say it wouldn't mean the blood become tummy because the blood of conscience doesn't become is not the travel tumor. It would mean the meat became tummy, and therefore you can't sprinkle the blood, whatever. Vishyasa, or if it was taken out of the Azara, because we've learned before that if the blood is taken out of the Azara, then it's possible to sprinkle on the bear. The Ezri Shaloi Haithal Ashata Kosher, what is a case where it never had a Shata Kosher, where there was never any time when this blood had any period of time when it was kosher to sprinkle on the bear? Shanishka Tachut was mana of Chutzla Mekoma. For example, if it was shafted with the thought of Chutzla mana of Pigle, or Chutzla Mekoma, where the COVID became fossil of Pigle, Vishakidla Tzulin the Zorku with Dhamma, or Tzulin did the Kabbalah or the Zrika. Now Rashi takes back the word Bezorku, because Rashi says later on in the Gemara we're going to learn that if the blood was already sprinkled on the Mizbeach, then the din of kibbutz does not apply anymore. The din of kibbutz only applies to blood that is suitable to be sprinkled on the mizbeach. Once some of it was already sprinkled, the rest of it is shirayim, and therefore there's no issue anyway. So why have the word?
This is dam.
It's not, for that purpose, it's not considered dam chatos anymore, because the pasuk uses the expression, ashe yizem yidam ala beged, meaning only yizem, only where it's yet to be sprinkled on the mizbeach. Not shekvar huza, not where it was already sprinkled on the mizbeach. So therefore, so Rashi takes out the word reserve. Tosfos brings a different girsa of Rashi, which is that it's that not to take out the word, but rather to say that it means oizofu, that either the psulim were makabel or they reserve it. And the point is Tosfos understands Rashi to be saying, according to that, that if the psulim were makabel, or if they reserve it, the point is, now that blood at that point is nidcha. You don't say that a kosher can do a new Kabbalah. You don't say a kosher can do a new Zrika. You say that's it, it's possible, and there's no going back on it. Shishu Mukubetus brings another version of it, that it is Shekibl Tulim Zizoku, that in other words, only if they were Makabal and they reserve it, then there's no going back on it, and then in other words, then it's completely possible, and there's no undoing it. Whereas if they'd only done one or the other, then there would be a way still to fix up the situation. Therefore, other blood in it, for example, blood that's still in the neck of the animal, they could be macabre again, etc. The halacha, I think, is that I think we learned earlier in the Sefer. I think we said that stolen do make shirayim. So therefore, once it's also with macabre, I think we said then there's no going back. Okay. Anyway. All right. So the Gemara Dam Chata, or Shemetas, or Shemitas, obviously somebody saw the word Shemitas over here and couldn't read it properly or whatever, and therefore wrote the wrong word, but anyway. So Dam Chata Shemitas, Fuller. So we said that if blood of Chata sprinkles on clothing, and we said that it applies both to Chata Nechelas, both to a Chata that's eaten and a Chata that's not eaten. And we said because it's a Torah for Chata. No, that's not the point. Actually, we're going to say later, that if it got on the clothing, at that point, it's already possible to sprinkle on the mizbeach. No, what we mean is, so the kohen carrying a basin of blood that's meant to be sprinkled on the mizbeach. If some of that blood now goes and gets on clothing, then that clothing is going to have to be washed in the azara. That's what we're saying.
Before the
zrika. That's before the zrika. That's the point. If it's after the zrika, you can have, also, for example, you can have, let's say, he splashed some of it on the mizbeach and some of it splashed back. You could have, he daubs it on the mizbeach and then a piece of clothing touches it or whatever. Those cases do not require kibbutz. We're going to deal with those later.
When the
din is that a piece of clothing needs this kibbutz, and the azara is in. If it got the blood on it before that blood was sprinkled out. Okay. So the question is, if you're telling me, as the Mishnah said, that Torah Tachatas means the same rules apply to all Chatas, after the Chatas Oif Hami, then it should include a Chatas Oif as well, that if blood of it gets on clothing, it should need kibbutz. Alamatanya, then why are we learning a Braita? Not like that. The Braita says, Yochotei dam chatas oif tone kibbutz. You would think that blood of a chatas oif requires kibbutz. Tamad lama zeis. Therefore, you have a mirror to the possible. Zeis turas a chatas, meaning this and not something else. So what is it? Why are you saying turas a chatas that includes everything, and then you're being the maya to bird? Amar shlokish mishum bar kapara, because omar kros yishokhe. Because the context is, the pasuk says, those part of the chatas, in the place where the oil is shefted, the chatas have to be shefted. Birds aren't shefted. In the shchotas, I call them the gather. The pasuk is only talking about ones that are shefted. Okay. The question is, but then in that case, maybe you should say that that's only talking about kov, only about chatas that are eaten. Since after all, the pasuk says the makom kodesh te'ochel, in the holy place it should be eaten. Avo pnimius loy. In other words, maybe we should say that then we're excluding both. We're excluding birds and we're excluding pnimius. Birds because of zois, and pnimius because it's not eaten. It's not eaten. And it says the makom kodesh te'ochel. The answer is Rabbi Bachmara Terah. Okay, we have the rebrief from the word Terah. You have the rebrief from the word Terah. Okay, so the question is, Ihochi after the Chatas Oif Nami, then you go back to, if you have a Ribui, then you can put Chatas Oif. Torah means the same Torah, the same, no, it's not a Torah. It means, when the Torah uses the word Zoit Torah on something, it means there's a certain set of general rules that apply to everything that's mentioned over here. So
for example, Zois Torah. Well, it is a Nismach, that's true. But Zois Torah means, or Zois HaTorah also, yeah, it's not even a common Nismach. It means the same rules apply to everything that's being mentioned. So it means the same rules apply to different kinds of chassas. So if we have a meet, so the question is, if we have the Rivui from Torah, after the chassas of Nami, then we should include chassas of as well. And the answer, of course, is Miat Rahman Zois. So now, of course, if we have a Rivui and we have a Miat, how do we know what we're being Marba and what we're being Mamai? Umar Rahisa. So what makes you say that you should be Mamai the chassas of and be Marba the chassas of Nami, and not the other way around, right? Right, but the fact is, if you're going to, right, but you have two words. You have Zois, okay, it starts like this. Zois Torah Tachasas, then Koyma Shef Tashachat Ha'Oila Tashachat Tachasas, in the place where the Oila is shefted, the Tachas should be shefted. Then the next process continues, that Koyin Amachata Oisa Yechlana, the Koyin who does the Kapara of it should eat it, meaning any Koyin who's capable of doing the Kapara, or in other words, kosher for the Avodah, can eat it. We'll learn about that concept in the next paragraph. The Mokam Kaddish Ta'ocho, in the holy place it should be eaten, Bahasar Oimoy. Then it continues with the dinim about dam sprinkling on clothes. So we have, you're going to argue that it doesn't include birds because tishachet, you should also not include kmingis because it says te'ocho. But the answer is because we have a ribui from Torah, from Eremir, from Zeus. So now the question is, well, given that you have, then why is my brother one and why am I the other? The answer is mitzadra, the chassas, behem of kmingis, havale, the rabuye. It's more logical to say that we're going to include a chassaris of kmingis. And rather, because they have more similarities to a chassas katsona. Shekin behema, because number one, like a chassas katsona, it's a behema. Number two, shchita sofrin, and that's number two and three, actually. They both require shchita, unlike a bird is melita. They both have to be done in the north, unlike a bird, we said, is done lamata, is done anywhere on the, is done on the south side of the zeach, on the lower half. The kabbalah, but both of them, the blood has to be received in a keli.
No,
hazan or nothing. A bird squeezed on its right, squirted onto the mizbeach. The keren, they both have to be done on the corner of the mizbeach, as opposed to the chassas ha'oif, we said it's just done someplace on the bottom half of the mizbeach. The esban, he has to do it with his finger, as opposed to the... In other words, by the chassas ha'oif, we said he takes the bird and he squirts it towards the wall of the bottom half of the mizbeach. The extra, you need to do it with your finger. By both Pnimius and Chesonius, by Chachas Chesonius, he daubs it with his finger on the four corners. By the Chachas of Pnimius, he does Hazois with his finger. He sprinkles like this, the Achas of the Shadow of Master, whatever, and also the ones on the Mizeach Hazois. So they both involve using the finger. The Chuda, and they both have to be done on the actual corner, down the actual edge of the corner. Which Tosfos points out, we learned earlier in Asia McCartney, we actually had a machlokes on the subject, does it literally have to be done on the keren? Does it literally have to be done on the keren, or can it be done any place on the top half of the mizbeach, and does it have to be on the actual corner, or can it be within an amma on either side of the edge of the corner? But Tosfos says, okay, the Gemara just means over here that whichever opinion says you need one. Whichever opinion says the other, you need the other. The point is, by bird, everybody agrees you only need one of them. The ishim, and all of them are burnt on the fire, as opposed to the chatasoid, only the blood is squirted onto the mizbeach and everything else, the kohen eats. There's nothing of it goes on the mizbeach. So therefore, you have a lot of similarities between, okay, so and with the chatasoid sminis, you have the emurim are burnt on the mizbeach, and the rest of them are also burnt outside the machnas. So the point is, there's a lot of similarities between chatas sminis and chatas chatasoid. Therefore, if we have a rebuy, we should assume that it includes that.
Let's point out.
Yes?
That the chatasoid is... Mata and sprinkled? No.
Because the chassas of Nimitz is not sprinkled by Milo. Chassas of Nimitz is sprinkled inside the head.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so the question is, Adarab chassas of Oy Kabbalah. No, we already said, I'm a Bein Abadim for the ones who can kick her out. Or else, I'm a Bazaar. Yes. Okay, so the question is, Adarab chassas of Oy Kabbalah. Okay, but on the other hand, I can find you some similarities between chassas of Oy and chassas behem, chassas of Oy. We'll see. Shekin chut, because number one, it takes place outside kamosa, like the chatas chasona, unlike the chatas chasnimis, which is in the ankle, the achila kamosa, and it's eaten like the chatas chasona, unlike the chatas chasnimis, which is gross. No, of course not, but you don't need you burn the emurim on the mizbeach. Fine, but the point is you eat something of it as opposed to a chassas pnimius, the chassaris of Yom Kippur and the fire on Davos or Sivir or whatever, you burn the emurim on the mizbeach and the rest is burned outside your shalayim. So none of it is eaten.
The point that
Yeah, that's what Torah tells us. That's what you have to do with these five korbanos. You have to take them and burn them out in the Makom Hakedoshim. Well, we've talked about before the place north of Yerushalayim. I read a little more detail about it. Nowadays, it's not really recognizable anymore, but apparently as recently as 100 years ago, there were these little mounds of dirt out north of Yerushalayim about where the so-called green line is, about where the 1947 to 1967 border was. Where they did some chemical analysis of them, and they found there's a lot of residue of fats of animals and whatnot. They found bones and teeth over there or whatever. So they figured that was probably the Shefa Hadesha. There is an explanation. I don't know offhand. Rav Shachar Hirsch's big symbolic explanation for such things, but that's how it is. I'll look it up.
Also, the
Paradigm is not after the Machia. Yeah. No, it's not. The Paradigm is on Harazay. We straight on Harazay, straight across from there. Okay. All right, onwards. Okay. So therefore, so again, you have certain similarities between Chapas Ha'oif and Chapas Chitzonah, so maybe that's the one to be by it. Okay, the answer is Hanach Mephishim. The answer is you have more similarities between the Chapas Chitzonah and the Chapas Chitzonah, so therefore, so that outweighs two similarities with the Chapas Ha'oif. Well, you know, how many did we say? We had Behema, Shchita, Sofen, Kabbalah, Kli, Keren, Esther, Chuda, and Ishim. That's eight things, yeah. So eight beats two. Okay, so that's one way of understanding it. That's what the Shlokish is telling us in the name of our Kapora. That's how we know that Chachas Pnimis is included in the din of Kibbutz for blood that gets on clothing, whereas Chachas Ha'oif is not. So we have Zoyf versus Yatsoyah. Rav Yosef says, I have another way of learning it. Because, yes, it's true, the Pasuk mentions eating, but it uses the expression, yechlenna, the Kohen who does the Avodah, should eat it, implying only one out of the types of Chatois that's eaten does this rule of Kibbutz apply to. And you have two types of Chatois that are eaten, Chatas Behema, Chatas Chatona, that is, and Chatas Oif. So if the Torah is telling us yechlenna, it means the rule only applies to one of the two of them. Therefore, we have a source to say that it should exclude Chatas Oif. It means that the Torah is saying only. That's what we see. It means that within the ones themselves that are eaten, the Torah is being reminded that the rule doesn't apply to all of them. But there's no such mirror for the Pnimius, so therefore it applies to the Pnimius. So the question is, Ella Zois Lomali, okay, so according to Rabbi Yosef, why do you need the word Zois to be reminded the Chatasoi? Because according to him, you're learning it from the word Yeshua. The answer is, E Lav Zois, yes, but Rabbi Yosef would say, If you didn't have the word zoyt, how many yeshlana urcha dekro? You would think, okay, why the fact that it says yeshlana, fine, that's just a normal way of phrasing things in the pasuk. The pasuk is saying that the kohen who does the avodah should eat it. You wouldn't realize that there's something to douse him especially from it. Kamash Malan, that is why, because you have the word zoyt, therefore you realize there's something the Torah is trying to tell you, that there's a certain niyot over here. Now you understand what are you going to be reminded among the ones that are nechalis. Among the one, now that you have a word zoyt, that you know you have to be reminded one of the three types of chatois, which kind are you going to be reminded? One of the types of feet. Namely the chatois. So within the chatois chatois itself, so we know we have to be reminded one of them. But he would say, again, because it's a tishochet, or because there's
If you didn't have the word
zoyt, you wouldn't know to douse in anything from Yechlana. So the word zoyt puts you on the alert. You should know there's going to be a miut coming up. What is the miut going to be if the choice is going to be between chatas ha'oit, which is eaten, and chatas pnimis, which is not? The word Yechlana comes and tells you which one it is. It's going to be chatas ha'oit. Rabba says, I have another way of looking at it. The pasuk says that if the blood squirts on clothing, implying Bahazoi Sakosim Medaber, implying Rabba says, Rabba learns like this. You were thinking all this time that the pasuk is primarily talking about the Chatoris HaNeacholos, the Chatoris HaChitzonis, and you need to find a way how we know it also includes the Chatoris HaPnimis. Rabba turns that out of his head. Rabba says the fact that it uses the word Asheyizeh, implying Bahazoi Sakosim Medaber. The Pasuk is primarily talking about the kind of chatas where the application of blood is done by Hazar. And that would be the chatas of Pnimis. because the chatas of nimis, you do hazah, you do achas samayla v'sheva l'mata, or with the other ones, not a mim kippur, you just do sheva, but whatever, the point is, hazah means sprinkling. In other words, with a regular chatas, the regular chatas of tzayna, the kohen dips his finger in and goes, all about kevesh v'fon ala tzayviv, and he goes, during this mizrachis, tzaynis, and he daubs it, he smears it down the corner of the mizrach. Right? That's not hazah, that's mizina. That's mizina v'ekta. The hazah is like what he does inside the Kodesh of Adashim, or what he does inside the Heichel, where he dips his finger in and does like this, or like this. He sways it, yeah, sprinkles it into the air, or whatever, yeah. So that's hazah. So therefore, ba'hazah is hakas medash. So that's what he says. Therefore, so therefore, if we're going to say that the pasuk is, so just the opposite, therefore, the pasuk is primarily telling us that this din of kibbutz applies to chatas pnimiyus. By using the word Torah, we also include Chatoris Chatonis. Therefore, we're not going to include Ois, because Ois is even further away from that. Ois has nothing in common with Chatoris Chatonis. At least you found before it has two things in common with Chatoris Chatonis, but it has nothing in common really with Chatoris Chatonis. Therefore, we're not going to be mad at it, because we have no reason to be mad at it. With Ois, you do Mitzri, but no, well, actually, with a Chatos, you do Hazah, but it's a different kind of Hazah. It's not really, it's a Chatos Chatonia, yeah, I mean, a Chatos Ois is Chatonia, no such thing as an Ois that comes inside. We're actually going to deal with that later. But so you take it and you squirt the blood out of it onto the Mizrach. That's not the regular kind of Hazah where he does with his finger, where he dips in his finger and does Hazah. Yeah. Okay, so the question then is, Vahatanya, What are you talking about? You, Rabbi, are telling me then that the pasuk is primarily referring to chatas pnimiyus, and you're going to use a ribui to learn chatas chatonis, but the Mishnah says the other way around. The Mishnah told us that the pasuk is primarily talking about chatonis, the ones that are eaten, and we use the word chodas to learn also the pnimiyus. So you, Rabbi, have it exactly backwards to the Mishnah. Because the pnimiyus are not eaten. The answer is in miriko shtipa. Rabba would answer that what the Mishnah means is not as far as the din of kibbutz, as far as the din of merikah u'shtipah, this other din that we're going to deal with later in the parak about kashering kalim that we use to cook a chatas. That's where the pasuk is referring to ones that are eaten, because obviously ones that are burnt are not going to be cooked in a kalim; they're going to be burnt outside the azara. Merikah shifa is cleansing and scouring and rinsing and whatever the kalim that are used for cooking the chatas, which we'll deal with later on in the parak. We'll deal with we'll deal with it. Okay. So therefore, Rabba would learn that when our Mishnah says Apapisha and Medabshain, I call it Medabri element that follows, that's not referring to the din of dam, it's referring to the din of merikah shifa. When it comes to the din of kibbutz, Rabba would say, given that the pasuk says Ashiyazet, that is sprinkled, he would say that comes to teach us that it only applies to the type of chatas where the blood is sprinkled, namely chatas pnimiyus. And therefore, we only need a ribui to teach us that it applies to chatas as well. Okay, the question then is, Hachi. Okay, fine, but if you're going to learn it that way, then when the Mishnah uses the expression echad anecholos ve'echad pnimiyus, when the Mishnah says that this din applies both to the ones that are eaten and to the ones that are brought inside the heichel, if you're going to say, you Rabba, that the pasuk is primarily referring to the one to the pnimiyus, then it should say the other way around. Echad pnimiyus ve'echad anecholos mivoylei. It should say both the pnimiyus and also the necholos, because usually that's how it is. Usually the Gemara, usually the Mishnah, will list the one that's more kosher first. Tosfos brings a number of examples of that in various places in Shas. That you usually have, when you have a list of things, when the Tana says echad this and echad that, usually he lists the one that's more obvious first. So according to Rabba, the pnimiyus is a more obvious one, because that's according to him what the pasuk is talking about. So it should say in that order, echad pnimiyus, echad necholos. But the answer is Tony echad pnimiyus, echad necholos. Fine. Rabba's version of the Mishnah will go like that. The Mishnah should be switched around, echad pnimiyus, echad necholos. Fine. Okay. Yeah, because it was about that after all. Yeah, it could be. Okay, so the question is, you have to ask now. Fine, but in that case, why shouldn't you, after all, going back to the chatas ois? Okay, so the chatas ois, the blood is sprinkled. The hizda midama chatas up there is there. So it's not the same kind of hazah with the finger, like I was saying before, but nevertheless, it is a hazah. It is squirting. If you're going to say, Rabba, the pasuk is talking about ones that where the blood is sprinkled, then a chatas ois is also sprinkled, just in a different way, but it is a hazah. so therefore it should be included as well? The answer is Yet Rahman Azai. Rabba will still have to come on to what we said before that Rish Lakish brought, that you have the miut from the word Zayt, and therefore that teaches us not Kata Zayt. Even if, yes. Okay, so the question is, Yehachi Chitsonu Nami. Yehachi Chitsonu Nami Loi. Okay, then you should say it doesn't apply to Rechata Chitsonu at all, because that's not, doesn't have Azar at all. And the answer is, of course, Rebu Rahman Azai. That's again, but the Torah was my the word Torah. Again, Umar Issa, then you have to ask, like we asked your Shlokish, then what makes you say, if you anyway need to use the Miut from Zois and the Ribri from Torah, what makes you say that it applies one way in the other, right? And again, the same answer as before, Mistabra, Chapas Behema, Havala, the Rabuye, Shekin Behema, Shkita Sopin, the Kabbalah Sli, the Karen Be'etzah, the Chodah Be'ishim, because you have all those eight things that a Chapas Kasona has in common with a Chapas Sli. Okay, the question is again, okay, the Chapas Oif should be Marbe because it's likely Chapas Pnimis in one way, we don't have two ways, it's not eaten, but in one way, in that they both have Hazar, different kinds of Hazar, but Hazar nonetheless. And again, the answer is kind of sufficient, 8 beats 1. The rabbi needs that rule, the rabbi needs that explanation as well.
But they, all the three of them, they have Hazar.
Chapas Hasana is not Hazar, it has the sin of Esther, it's not kind of thing.
It applies directly to blood onto
the Mizbeach. He daubs, he smears the blood with his finger down on the Mizbeach. That's not Hazar, right.
But the Mitzvah you apply also.
No, you're thinking of Olaf. Chapas Oif is you hold the body of the bird at some distance from the Mizbeach and you squeeze it and the blood squirts out toward the Mizbeach. That's Hazar. Hazar is you grab an Olaf, yeah. You press it directly against the sure. Yeah. Right. We learned before in the sixth parak, we said that oif that oilas to oif is done, you take after Malika, you take the bird and you press it against the bear to squeeze out the blood, the nymph the jomo out on the bear and it drips down. As opposed to the chatas, is you do mitzvah, you hold it at a distance and you squirt it and it squirt and you squeeze it and it squirts out towards the bear. Do it up and down, whatever. Okay. You must it. Then you have the shirai and you press against the mizbeach, but that's already after Hazar. Okay. Fine. So then we have three different ways of seeing what we said that the din of kibbutz applies to chatas chatzona and chatas pnimis, but not to. We had Rish Lakish's way that we learned from Zois versus Torah. We had Rabbi Yosef's way that we learned from Yechlena. And although we also need Zois to put up on the alert to Zaushin from Yechlana, and we have Rabbas that we learn that it's the other way around. We start with the Pnimius and we include the Chitzonius based on Torah because we say Yizah. Because Yizah, but we don't include the bird because Zois. Okay. Boy Rav Ovin. So now Rav Ovin asks a question. Now this first question that Rav Ovin is going to ask is not really directly related to our Gemara. The reason why we have it is because it's part of a series of questions where we're going to get to something where we're going to bring our Mishnah as a proof to answer one of the questions. So, Boyer of Ovid. Chatas Oif Sheishnes Gomer V'Tabor V'Pnim Mahu. Now, we learned at the end of the sixth parak, at the end of that sixth or seventh parak, whatever, back in the Ayin, we learned that if blood of a chatas is taken, I mean, the page actually, we learned that if blood of a chatas is taken into the heichal, we said that chatas now can't be eaten. It has to be taken and burnt. Chatas tefoina, we're talking about. Where chatas tefoina, the blood of it is taken into the heichal, that blood becomes fossil, and the carbon becomes fossil, and it has to be taken out and burnt. The question is, Rav Ovin is asking, the heichal is the main building of the Bismarck. So the Ulam, the Kurdish Kadashim. It's when you look at the diagram downstairs that Nachman has up now for the 3 weeks, it's a T-shaped building over there. You have the main building over there that you have the two wings in front, and you have that's the head. Okay. So Rav Ovin is asking us, Chatas Oif Sheichnes Dama V'Tavar V'Tnim Mal. Now what happens, if you were to take a Chatas Oif and carry it into the Heichel with the blood still in the neck of it, Mahu, what would be the din? Would that blood and therefore that carbon be tossed or not? The question basically is, Tavara Klisharit Dami, do we consider the neck of the bird to be like a Klisharit? Because after all, the Hazar is done directly to onto the Mizbeach. Similar to with a behemoth, what do? You catch the blood in a keli, then you walk the keli over to the mizbeach, and you do the appropriate type of sprinkling or applying or whatever to the mizbeach. Here, what do you do with a hoppel cell? If you take the bird itself, we just said, and you squirt the blood out towards the back, so effectively the bird itself functions as a free shoddy. But therefore, maybe if you carry it in to the hayhole and consider you carried in the blood in a free shoddy. What?
Because
you carried the blood in a container that's supposed to be that you do the avoid with. Or if still, therefore, it would be compulsive. A yom, a cassava behemoth. Or maybe you should consider it like the equivalent of bringing it in inside the neck of the animal, where there it does not become possible, as we learned before, because midama amar achmana v'leidusara, because we learned previously when we learned this whole concept of bringing in the blood and it becoming possible, we said that because it says midama, if you bring from its blood, implying not the sara, not if you bring the flesh of it in, and in this case, then if you bring in the neck of the animal with the blood still in it, then with the flesh, therefore, doesn't become hostile. So maybe with a bird, it would be the same thing. Toshma, so come, we'll bring a proof as follows. The Braita says, Pirkasav nichasalasnim, suppose that a chasasa'os, now after you shecht, or in this case, we're talking about birds, after you do malika, you know it happens sometimes that an animal or a bird will still be thrashing around a little bit. You have like a forest, you see, for example, because you still have, you know, the nerve that's still firing or whatever, it takes a little while for it to completely stop moving. So now, let's say, so you did malika on a chatasoiv, and then pirkasa, and then it moved convulsively like that, v'nichnasa l'fnim, and then in the course of that, and then the jumping around over there, it came into the hekel, v'yasa, and then it came back, and then v'chazua, and then it came back out, kshera, then it would be kosher. Now implying that l'chora, why is it kosher? Only because it went in by itself, because nobody actually took it in there. Implying, let's say you did it on the top step. You did it on the top step, and then it thrashed around a bit, and it ended up inside, and then it thrashed around a little more, and then came back out. So we're saying it's kosher. Implying, on the face of it, that if somebody actually took it in there, meaning that it was done via dying by somebody, then it would be possible. The reason why Rashi points out, by the way, in this case, the Mishnah didn't really need to mention, the Braita rather, didn't really need to mention that it came out, the same din would apply if it stayed in. The reason why he mentions it is because for comparison with another case that it mentions in the Braita, which we're going to quote now, about if it goes in and out of the Azara, where there it makes a difference. Okay. So anyway, so
first went in and out
into the haze.
And then
so No, a different case. And it's not going to go that far. Hahichnitzabsula, implying that if you actually took it into the hekel, on the face of it, the Braita is saying it would be kosher. The Gemara says no, because v'likai meis, because according to your own svara, right? Nichnitz only because it went in by itself, then it's kosher. But if you took it in, it sounds like it would be kosher, right? So the answer is v'likai meis, but according to your own svara, that's how you think that's the distinction is important. Gabe kodshe kodshim, what about consider the next part of that Bryce that continues as far as Kodshid Kodshim, Dikotoni, where you have as it says in the Bryce over there, Pirkas of a Yosel Adorim. Now let's say you have Kodshid Kodshim, we have to be shechted in the northern half of the Azorim. So what happens is after you shechted it, and here we're talking about a behemoth, let's say, so it was Mephaukis, it moved convulsively like that, and it ended up in the southern half of the Azorah, the Chazra, and then it came back into the north, Shera. Then we're saying it's Kodshid. What are you implying? How is it? Well, look. And what are you implying? And if you were to carry it out to the southern side, it would be possible. You only have to have. It doesn't become possible if it's taken into the jarim. It only becomes possible if you did the shchita in the jarim, if you did the kabbalah in the jarim. If you were to shech the animal in the suffering, and then before you do the kabbalah, pick it up and carry it into the jarim, into the southern half of the azara, and then carry it back into the suffering and do the kabbalah, there's no problem with that. So just because the Braita mentions Pirkasa doesn't mean that it's making a distinction between Pirkasa where it moves by itself versus you move it. Pirkasa, therefore, that we shouldn't assume that there's any such distinction by a bird either. Maybe, okay, the Braita mentioned the case where it moved and by itself went into the Hayekel. But the same din. Maybe it would be if a person took it in there. If we're saying the Braita, the Braita is telling us that if the animal moved from the northern half to the southern half, so imagine you shechted it right on the line between north and south, and then it moved after the shechita and went over into the south. Now, what we're saying is it's not only if it moved by itself. Even if you were to pick it up and carry it over the line, as long as you bring it back before you do the Kabbalah, you're good. It's still right, because there's no actual mechitza in the Azara that divides north and south. So therefore, we see in that part of the Braise that there's no distinction between Pirkasa versus Yumu. Yeah? So why should we assume the beginning of the Braise, when it mentions Pirkasa in the case of the bird going into the Hegel, why should we have to assume that it's telling us Pirkasa as opposed to carrying it in? Maybe the Braise is mentioning Pirkasa because that's a more typical case, but not necessarily that it wouldn't be the same din if you carried it in. So it wouldn't necessarily be possible. It would have a proof one way or the other. The reason why the Braise mentions the case of Pirkasa is because it wants to contrast the case with if it went outside the Azara, where there, if it goes outside the Azara, even on its own, it becomes possible. There, it doesn't matter whether Pirkasa or whether you carried it out. So therefore, that's why it mentions Pirkasa, because even Pirkasa, if you shepherded it right by the edge of the Azara, and it was Mephrakis, and it moved outside the Azara, it will become possible. In other words, we have three cases. In and out of the Hegel, north versus south of the Azara, and in and out of the Azara. In and out of the Azara in any direction. Inside the Azara versus outside. Now, so when outside the Azara, the Braise wants to tell us, the Chiddush, that even though it did it by itself, the Korban is still possible. It doesn't need to tell us if you took it out, obviously. If you did it via Dai, you took it out, of course it's going to be possible. Therefore, the Braise is mentioning Pirkasa in the other two cases, even though in the other two cases that might not make a difference. In the case of north and south, it for sure doesn't make a difference. And in the case of the Oif, maybe it makes a difference, maybe not, but you can't prove one way or the other from this Braise. Okay. So we don't have an answer to that then. Boy, Rav Alvin, but now Rav Alvin asks a related question. Nishbach ala rifav osama. What happens if after you did the malika, if the blood of the oif spilled on the floor directly from the neck and the osra, and then you collect it in a cave? Now we learned before about a behemoth. We learned about a behemoth that goes from the neck directly onto the floor as possible. But if it spills from the cave, then you can then. Now we're asking. Exactly. The question is basically the same thing as before. Is the neck of the oif considered a cave or not? Do we say the Torah doesn't require you to use a kli sharet for the bird? The Torah is making on you and saying you don't need a kli sharet for it. But it's not that it can't be in a kli sharet. The hilchah oath by the kosher, therefore you could collect it from the floor and it would be kosher. So there's nothing wrong with putting in a keli in that case. So therefore, in other words, it would be the equivalent of it falling from the keli onto the floor. Or maybe the Torah is insisting that if you put the blood of the bird in a kli sharet, it will actually be possible. You have to sprinkle it directly from the neck. And therefore, the hilchah oath by a possible. Therefore, if you collect it in a keli, then it becomes possible. Oh, my Rava Toshma. So Rava says, come on.
That's the exact opposite of what I would have thought.
Which is?
I would have thought that if it falls on the floor and you're allowed to pick it up, that means the neck was a kli sharet.
Well, that's great. That's what Rashi is saying. In other words, if you say that Torah didn't require a kli sharet, that's what Rashi is saying. Then the neck functions as a kli sharet. So therefore, okay, if it's spilled from the neck, it's the equivalent of going from one kli sharet, then you can pick it up. But if you say that the Torah insists no kli sharet, then it means the neck itself is like the neck of a behemoth. Therefore, if it's spilled from that, it's not a kli sharet. Therefore, if it's spilled from that, you can't collect it, just like you can't with a behemoth, right? Amar Rava Toshma. So Rava says, come on, bring your proof, and that's why we're bringing the Sylvia in over here, because Rava is going to use our Mishnah as a proof.
But it is.
He says, we're going to see. Yach, we see in the Mishnah, Yachu Yehei Dam Chakasa Oif Tones, or actually not the Mishnah, the Braise actually, that he said, that they recorded before from Barkabara. Yachu Yehei Dam Chakasa Oif Tones, people. You would think, we said before, that the blood of Chakasa Oif, if it gets on clothing, should have to be washed in the Azara. Talmud Lomar Zois, and he said, therefore we have a miyuk in the word Zois. Now, the Rava says, the Isbach that missed the possible Beirachmana. Now, if you're going to tell me that if blood of a Chatas Ois gets onto a keli or into a keli, then it's possible as the second possibility that you, Rav Alvin, are saying, and therefore just putting it in a keli is going to make it possible, well then, typically, then I have another reason. I don't need the reason of Zois. I have another reason why this blood wouldn't need kibbutz. Because as soon as the blood gets into the airspace above the cave, we learned before, we had a sugya about avir kli to kli yami, that if you have the blood is coming out of the neck and going into a cave, which is going to be possible, we have the case over there, for example, where the bottom of the cave broke, and therefore the blood is never going to actually land in it, then we said it's possible, because avir kli to kli yami, because as soon as it comes into the airspace of the cave, it's considered as if it was in the cave. Here we would say the same thing, so as soon as the blood starts coming out from the neck and is starting to and is in the air above this piece of clothing, Kaylee will be hitting the piece of clothing, then it'll become possible that he's going to land on the piece of clothing. And and you, Rav Oven, are arguing that there's a possibility that once blood of a chassasoy lands on a Kaylee, any kind of Kaylee other than putting it directly on the back, then it becomes fossil. Well, then if it became fossil, then you can't use it for sprinkling anyway. If you can't use it for sprinkling, the whole concept of kibbutz doesn't apply, because it only applies to blood that's suitable to be sprinkled on the mezbeach. The Rav is saying the fact that we need the mir zois implies that blood of a chatas could very well go in a case. Usually you do it directly from the neck. Therefore, in this case, if it's going to be landing on a Kaylee, it hasn't yet become fossil. But you could conceivably then squeeze it out of the Kaylee and sprinkle it on the mezbeach. Applying that to the oven's question, then the answer would be, if the blood went onto the floor, yes, you could pick it up in a Kaylee and put it on the mezbeach.
And therefore
that would be the answer to the oven's question. Rav Huna says, not necessarily, because you could answer that when do you need the mezbeach, the madbis kli, the tzavara. You could have, you're holding the piece of clothing directly against the neck of the bird, or right next to it, so therefore there's no other kli. As soon as it comes out of the neck, it's immediately landing on the thing. So when it touched the clothing and when it became possible, happened at the same moment. You don't have any other for it to become possible, that split second for it to become possible in between. Therefore, kibbutz would have to apply if it weren't for the mirror to zot. You don't have a proof. As opposed to, in other words, if you had held the Kaylee some distance away and you had that split second when it's in the air, when you're arguing at that moment it becomes possible, and then by the time it lands on the Kaylee it's already possible, and therefore kibbutz shouldn't apply, fine, but it doesn't have to be that way. It could be that it's only in this case, but if it was the other case, it would actually be possible, and you'd have to don't need zoys. You anyway wouldn't need kibbutz because the blood is already possible. But no proof one way or the other. So the Rambam paskins in both of these cases, in the case of the bird where he took the blood inside the neck into the heichel, and in this case over here where the blood fell on the floor and he collected in the Kaylee, with both of those, the Rambam paskins that misada sofik, the korban is possible. And therefore what you do is as usual with a half a sofik at the sofik. No, well, it's a sofik, so therefore, because it's a sofik and it's a din d'oraisa, therefore what you do is you do the rest of the avodah of the chatas, as you usually would, however you don't eat it. The usual rule with a chatas, which is any kind of sofik, is the kohenim can't eat it, because if it was possible, then the malika will have made it neveha. So that'll be the rule over here. Well, that he didn't necessarily accomplish his kapara, he'll have to bring another chatas away, I'll stop again.
In other words, you have to hold the Kaylee completely close.
No, no, no. In other words, with a bird, normally you don't use a Kaylee at all.
Right.
What we're saying is, normally you don't use a Kaylee with a bird at all. If the blood goes onto the floor, then you cannot collect it in a Kaylee because the carbon may be possible at that point. So just to be on the safe side, fine, you do put it on the mezbeach. But no, I mean, you don't. I mean, the carbon is possible at that point. You go and take the carbon and then burn it and dispose of it and whatever, and the person has to bring a new carbon. That's what it is. In the case of what Rav Huna Brei de Rishua is saying is that if you were to take a piece of cloth and put it directly by the neck of the bird so that as soon as the blood comes out, it lands on the cloth, that is where we need the mir from the word zois to tell us that cloth does not have to be washed in the azara. As opposed to if you held the cloth some distance away, then maybe if you say the blood becomes possible as soon as it's above the cloth, then also it wouldn't need kibbutz on those grounds, or maybe it still remains kosher, and therefore the only reason you don't have to wash it is because of dust. So either way, the halacha would be you don't have to wash it.
You're talking about with the behemoth.
No, we're talking about an oath.
But an oath, you never have to wash.
That's the point. Is it you don't have to wash it because of zeus, or is it you don't have to wash it because the blood is anyway possible, which was Robert's point.
So this is just a direct That's the point.
There's no time for the blood to become possible before it lands on the cloth. Therefore, the only reason to say you should not have to wash it is because the pasuk says zois, that it doesn't apply, that this din of kibbutz doesn't apply to chatas zois. Is that we established before that it goes on earth, right? Bomine Levi, Merevi, actually, I should look about this ad. Levi asked Rebbe the following question. Nitas mi beged le beged mahu. What happens if blood gets on one piece of clothing and then from there it drips onto another piece of clothing? Do we say, so does the second, so the first one obviously needs kibbutz. Does the second one need kibbutz? Mi beged, do we say mi beged tama idchile le kibbutz? Do we say once the blood landed on the first beged, then it's already nidcha? It's possible to you, it's possible already to be sprinkled on the mizbeach. Therefore, kibbutz won't apply to the second beged. Or maybe not. Amalei, the Rebbe tells him, do she'ela. That's a very good question. But the answer is, ton kibbutz mamonosha. Rebbe tells him, either way, the second beged is going to require kibbutz. Why? Either way, meaning in other words, either way that you think of the question, I will tell you that you still have to wash it. The second one. If you argue that the blood is still considered blood that can be sprinkled on the mizbeach, even though it landed on the first piece of clothing, well then it's kosher, therefore it's still blood that could be sprinkled on the mizbeach, therefore the rule of kibbutz still applies there, because it's still asher yizeh. It's still blood that could be sprinkled. If you're going to argue that once it landed on the first piece of clothing, then that blood is anyway possible for sprinkling, because at that point it requires kibbutz, I will answer you, I'm not Rabbi Akiva, really. Yes, but I hold like Rabbi Akiva, to Omar, where he disagrees with what we said in our Mishnah. In our Mishnah, we said the blood doesn't require kibbutz if the korban is possible, regardless if the blood is possible, rather, whether the blood had shafa kosher or not, whether there was any period when that blood was kosher to sprinkle on the mizbeach or not. Rabbi Akiva disagrees with that, as we will deal with tomorrow, Rabbi Hashem, that where Rav Akiva says if the blood ever had a period where it was kosher for sprinkling, and only later it became fossil, for example, it became tomei or what have you, dama tone kibbutz, and that blood still requires kibbutz. So therefore, Rebbe says, in this case, even if you argue that this particular drop of blood became fossil for zvika once it landed on the first beged, okay, but it was kosher before that. Therefore, there was a shata kosher there. Therefore, any beged that it lands on is going to require kibbutz. Even the second one. Now, the Rambam in fact practices that only the first beggar requires kibbutz. And the Noi Tekelim discuss, among other things, one possibility is, given that Rebbe is saying over here, so we could argue, I mean, the question hasn't really been answered. We say that Rebbe is saying either way, according to my opinion, it's going to require kibbutz. But given that the halacha is not like Rabbi Akiva, the question should still remain open, does it require kibbutz or not? But the Rambam paskins that the second one does not. And then the Noi Tekelim discuss back and forth why that should be. Taka, why should it be? If we left the question open, then why, Taka, should it be that the second one doesn't require kibbutz? Okay. Bamine Rami Bachama Mirab Chisda. Okay. Rami Bachama asked your Chisda. Here's another question. Nitzav Beged Tomei. What happens if the blood of a Chatas gets onto a Beged that is already Tomei?
That's his son-in-law, right?
Yeah, Rami Bachama was indeed your Chisda's son-in-law, yeah. Yeah, the famous thing that Rukhista's daughter, you have the famous story of Baba Basra over there, that Rukhista had his daughter on his lap when he's teaching Rava and Rami Bachama, and he asks her, which one of my Talmidim do you want to marry? And she says, both of them. And sure enough, she married Rami Bachama, and later on, he died or divorced her, and she married Rava, yeah. That's the Gemara in Baba Basra. The Gemara mentions that as an example where we see that Nebuah is given to children. Okay, anyway. So, yeah.
Yeah.
She didn't know, but she didn't know. Okay. Rami Bachama asks the following. Nitzav beged tomei now. What happens if the blood gets onto a beged which is already tomei? So therefore, it became tomei as soon as it touched the clothing. So the question is, do we consider that blood as possel, and therefore, and as if it became tomei before, therefore it shouldn't require kibbutz, or maybe not, since the tuma happened at the same moment that it fell, then therefore maybe it should require kibbutz. It shouldn't be in the Azara in the first place. Fine, let's say it is. Well, let's say blood was taken out of the Azara and again fell there. Okay. All right. So, Amar Rav Huna Breder Rishua. So, let's analyze Rami Bachama's question, says Rav Huna Breder Rishua. Mid come boy lay hochi. Since Rami Bachama is asking this question, Shmamina hoite loshata kosher benispala ain't dumma chavim kibbutz. Shmamina. That means that Rami Bachama must hold like this. That when we say in the Mishnah, Hoysa Lashaka Kosha Benitzala and Dhamma Fon Kibbutz, that when we say in the Mishnah that even if the blood had a Shasa Kosha, even if there was a period when it was kosher, and later on it became possel, we're still saying that it doesn't require kibbutz, Rami Bachama would understand Hanimila Bizeh Akhazeh, That's just one thing happened after another. First, it became postal for whatever reason, and later on, it got on the float. I was about back fly. But apparently, Romy Bahama is assuming that for purposes of the question, maybe he's not sure. If it happens about Dakas, if it becomes Tomei and Postal, if it becomes Postal and lands on the clothing at the same time, then maybe not. Maybe it would require two. Because Romy Bahama is, Rahuna Breda Bishop is saying that Romy Bahama is not sure in the Mishnah, or Jumalai Shah, or maybe it's no different. So in other words, Rabbi Bachama is asking like this. It became postal and it landed on the clothing at the same moment. Now the Mishnah told us that blood that's postal, the rule of kibbutz doesn't apply. But the fact that Rabbi Bachama is asking the question shows, therefore, that he's not sure. What do we mean? Is the Mishnah only talking about where blood became postal and later on landed on the clothing, that then it doesn't require kibbutz? Or maybe, does it mean, if it became postal and later on landed on the clothing, it doesn't require kibbutz? But if it happened at the same moment,
it would, maybe.
Or maybe there's no difference. That seems to be the premise of Rami Bahama's question. So now, Amalei, so Rav Chista answers him, the answer is that it would be the subject of machloikas between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim, according to Rabba's explanation, as we're going to discuss. And also, for that purpose, you need what Abaye explains what Rabba said. The Tanya, namely, we have like, we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Lozoimer, not Rabbi Eliezer, sorry, Rabbi Lozoimer. Mechatas shenitmu, mechatas paradum water that became tomei, mitarim. They're still able to be mitarim of person that became tomei, but some other truma, they're still able to be mitarim of person from tumas men. Why? Shadin nida mazin alera. Because after all, you see, if a woman is nida and also tomei mess, you can sprinkle paradum water on her. And they will, it won't make her tohu from nida, obviously, but it'll make her tohu from tumas mess. Later on, when she goes to the mikveh, then that'll take care of both things. After hazar, with paradum water on the third and seventh day, you still need to dip in the mikveh. So like this, it'll accomplish, the tefillah will accomplish both things for her.
Even though the water
went. That's the point. Even though when the water touches her, it'll become tummy. So Rabbi Lozer says you can do that. But Amar Rab, whereas the Chachamim disagree with that, but Amar Rabba, and Rabba says, let me explain what the machlokes is. Rabbi Lozer, the shita of Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Amar. Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Lozer, in that, is following the shita of his Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva. The Amar has Boras Kriya, Gavin Mokam Tomei, Kamuna Tomei. Where Rabbi Akiva holds that if you pass a Kali over a Tomei area, it's considered as if it already landed there. In other words, what are we dealing with over here? In other words, that Rabbi Lozer, the Rabbi Lozer would be saying, in other words, the way Rabbi is understanding Rabbi Lozer is the water doesn't become tomei only when it touches the nida. It becomes tomei even before it lands on her when it's above her, when it's in the airspace above her, right? And how do we, and therefore, so Rabbi Lozer would be saying, you see, the water became tomei before it ever landed on her, a split second before it ever landed on her, and yet it's mitzayir. So really see Rabbi Akiva holds this thing. We learn in a Mishnah in Parah, if a person is standing outside an oven, so you have an oven standing next to a wall, and there's a window in the wall. So somebody is standing next to the oven. So somebody is standing on the other. So you have the person, the oven, and the window. So the person, the window in the wall next to the oven. You have an oven next to the wall, and there's a window in the wall, and the person is standing on the other side, person, oven, window, and he reaches over the oven, the sheriff patana, and there's a sheriff in the oven, which therefore the oven is tummy. The nozzle of the login, the person reaches over to the window and takes a bottle of paradrum of water that's sitting over there, the Hevira Pitana, and he brings it to him, passing it over the oven. Rabbi Akiva says that it's Tomei because it passed over the oven, and the Chachamim says Tomei. Overhaul pligi, and therefore the machlokas is as follows. Rabbi Akiva saw a kumunah dummy. Rabbi Akiva holds it's considered as if it landed there, so therefore it's considered as if it actually landed inside the oven, therefore it became tummy from the sheret. And the chachamim hold that not. The haruvan is sari lab kumunah dummy. No, because only tumas mes does that. Tumas sheret doesn't, it's only inside the tanner itself. But okay, we're not to break over here and continue tomorrow to the office, so that's my job.